argument, United States v. Nunes. Mr. Brand Strader.
It pleases the court. Morning, Your Honors. My name is Thomas Brand Strader. I represent Francisco Nunes in this courtroom on appeal. We bring this matter to this court's attention based on our belief that the sentence imposed is unreasonable. First, we believe that the sentence was driven by unreliable, unacceptable, uncorroborated information. It took the form of phone calls that mostly, for the most part, originated with Francisco's father, Jesus, a twice convicted drug dealer. Further, we believe the reasonableness of the sentence is complicated by certain remarks made by the district court as its consideration of recognizable factors under 3553. If I can start with that concept, the district court chose to address three factors raised by the defense in arguing for a sentence of probation. The first consideration was Mr. Nunes' post-arrest rehabilitation. And the court, while acknowledging that he had done some fine things about community relations, about being mentors to young men, getting an education, working a job, the court noted that this all happened while he was under scrutiny post-arrest, and that while the spotlight was not on him, he was engaged in criminal activity. While certainly the rehabilitation was shown post-arrest, we believe the gist of that comment is that it doesn't really make any difference what you do after you've been accused of a crime. You should be treated no differently at sentencing than one who hasn't done anything after he's been arrested to improve his lot, to show the court that he is capable of rehabilitation. And what's significant about this particular factor...
I see why a judge can't decide to give no weight to that. You know, judges, post-Booker world, they have a lot of latitude. They might decide, you know, this really what a person does after he's caught doesn't really tell you much, if anything, about person's character, likelihood of recidivism, and so on.
Well, Judge, I would note that the rehabilitation potential of a defendant was one of the original ideas behind the Sentencing Reform Act back in 1984.
No, that's not true. Rehabilitation does not figure significantly in the modern sentencing theory. Anyway, what's to prevent a judge from saying, I'm just not persuaded by these people who do good deeds after they're arrested in order to make a good impression on the sentencing judge. Can a judge do that now after Booker?
I believe he can, Judge. I believe it should be considered at least some factor.
What's your view? Why does a judge have to accept that?
Because I believe it's a factor that's been recognized.
By whom?
By the courts, by the Reform Act.
I don't see that. Where is there anything in the Reform Act, in the Sentencing Reform Act, about criminals who suddenly turn over a new leaf after they're arrested, hoping to get a lighter sentence?
I think the exact terminology was the prospective rehabilitation potential of a defendant is a consideration.
Well, a judge could say that potential is not demonstrated by what the person does after he's caught, because it's so facile to say, oh yeah, I've turned over a new leaf, I do all sorts of good things now.
Well, the court sees no distinction then.
Sentencing, right?
The court sees no distinction about a person who does something like Francisco did, as opposed to the person who gets arrested and doesn't do anything. They shouldn't be treated any differently.
An honest person.
The second matter, Judge, is that the family consideration brought up by the defense of the birth of his child.
Discussed that. He explained why he didn't think that was significant.
But his explanation was that it's in every case. And candidly, I think you have to weigh it.
In every case, he said, he didn't say, I never take into consideration family problems created by, did he?
No, but he said that the impact on family of incarceration, one, not a positive thing, not supposed to be a positive thing, but two, it's in every case. Well, it's not in every case. And in this particular case, the most profound thing that happens to a man.
He was aware of the circumstances, and he just didn't think they were that significant.
Well, our position is, Judge, he chose to comment on it, and I think the comments indicate he didn't give meaningful consideration to these factors. Again, Mr. Nunes doing everything he can.
The fact that a judge rejects an argument doesn't mean he didn't give meaningful consideration to it.
I agree, Judge, unless he comments on it, why he did it.
He doesn't agree with you.
I'm sorry?
He doesn't agree with you.
True, but when he says...
There's anything special about these family circumstances.
What's special in Mr. Nunes' case, Judge, that as a young man with no prior criminal history, trying to improve his life after he made a mistake of getting involved with his drug-dealing father, had a child. And that's the most profound thing that can happen to a man, the birth of his first child.
Well, what are you saying?
I'm saying that the trial court disregarded that, discounted it. Oh, that's in every case.
He discounted it. Discounting and disregarding aren't the same thing. He didn't agree with you. He didn't think it was that important. There's a mother, right, a parent and grandparents.
Well, he didn't agree with them. That's why we're here, Judge, because we think that the court's consideration or his spoken consideration of these factors...
30% of American children are living either with no parents or just one parent. So it's not unusual.
Well, in the specific case, it would be unusual because it's his first child. And he's become a father. And maybe the court, and I disagree on the impact that has on a human being.
Why is the first child more important than a second child?
Well, the birth of every child is significant, but the first one, speaking from personal experience, was different. It changes things. It makes one more mature, more caring. He's got somebody else he's got to care about. And the third matter, Judge, is the disregarding of the medical condition. And we are not claiming that this was some extraordinary experience that Mr. Nunes suffered when he was in the car accident in federal custody. But the trial court completely disregarded it, re-diagnosed it, and said it's not about a car. He didn't even mention the car accident. He mentions this was about anxiety. It wasn't about anxiety. He was in a car accident in federal custody. And symptoms after that arose that required treatment. Again, does this change the sentence? No, but it's the comment the court decided to make about the factor that shows that he re-diagnoses Mr. Nunes despite the fact there's records before him. As importantly is the information that drove the calculation of the guideline in this case. Our position is that we never say that it was required to be beyond a reasonable doubt. We didn't say that, Justice Thomas did, but nevertheless, that the information received by this court to drive the guideline range was not corroborated, was the almost incoherent ramblings of a drug-dealing father, was not corroborated in any fashion. There's no physical evidence. It was based on a series of phone calls, mostly between the father and his customers or his compadres in his drug dealing. Even the judge admits that maybe that's not Francisco Javier that Jesus is talking to on the phone. But the court found that, based on the preponderance, that it was enough to add the 509 grams of cocaine. We asked this court to find, not beyond a reasonable doubt, but that the information provided that drove this sentence up the charts was not the type of sentence that anybody can have any confidence in taking away a man's freedom for that much longer of a period.
It's only 48 months, right?
As compared to what could have been a probationary sentence.
Sentence for drug crimes.
Not to what he pled guilty to, Your Honor. He pled guilty to two phone counts of marijuana. And take away the 509 grams that he shouldn't have been held accountable for, we're talking at a term of 10 to at maximum 20 months. So that's four times. A significant amount of time for a young father who's tried to make himself better. For those reasons, Judge, we ask this court to send this matter back to the sentencing court to be resentenced without the 509 grams of relevant conduct material and to properly consider the 3553 factors.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Administrator. Ms. Marin?
May it please the Court, my name is Maureen Marin, and I represent the United States. The District Court did not err when it found that the defendant was responsible for distributing with his father over 500 grams of cocaine, and it carefully considered defendant's arguments in mitigation before sentencing defendant to 48 months imprisonment, a sentence that was 9 months below the advisory guidelines range. With respect to the evidence that the District Court considered in arriving at a conclusion that the defendant had distributed more than 500 grams of cocaine with his father, the Court relied on two basic types of evidence. First, intercepted telephone calls, series of those calls between the defendant and his father who was distributing cocaine, as well as calls between his father's customers. The District Court was presented with several sequences of calls between the defendant and his father, and then between his father and his customers, in which his father referenced the defendant's involvement in his distribution of drugs. Those calls were corroborated by surveillance, by recovery of cocaine, not from the defendant, but from one of his father's customers, as well as by the hearsay statements that were presented to the court of other witnesses who testified who were involved in the defendant's cocaine distribution. With respect to the District Court's consideration of the defendant's mitigating circumstances, the record indicates that the District Court did in fact consider all of the circumstances that the defendant presented the court and did not reject any of them out of hand. He considered the defendant's character, expressly acknowledged the arguments in mitigation, but chose to weigh the seriousness of the offense more heavily than some of the mitigating information that was presented to the court. While the defendant argued in the trial court that he had made a simple mistake, the District Court rejected that idea and instead pointed to the continuing activity that the defendant had engaged in distributing marijuana, maintaining the grow house, and distributing the cocaine. With respect to defendant's medical conditions, the court did not ignore or re-diagnose the defendant's medical conditions. Instead, the court's comments revealed that he, in fact, carefully considered both the elements of the report and the circumstances of the diagnosis, which arose from a brief fender bender car accident in a small amount of time that the defendant had to serve at the MCC, and chose to discount those medical conditions. That being said, at the end of the sentencing, the District Court did impose a sentence below the guidelines range, 9 months below the guidelines range. If there are no questions from the court, for these reasons and those stated in the brief, the United States respectfully requests that this court affirm the defendant's sentence.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Marin. Mr. Brandstrader?
Just one comment. Sure. Finding on the relevant conduct. And I used the District Court's own words in its reference to space invaders, which we believe, in reading in context, indicates the court even itself believed the randomness of this information that was driving the sentence. The court admitted the evidence was not overwhelming. There was no smoking gun. In our belief, Judge, and we asked this court to find that the evidence that drove this sentence from a maximum of 16 to 20 months to 71 months was simply unacceptable under any standard. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much to both counsel.